Welcome to the Africa Speaking Podcast. The podcast discusses critical issues about the African continent. It is brought to you by Taweza Communications in Nairobi.
Welcome back. You are listening to the second and final part of our series. I am your host, Maslin Nyambala. And today, we are continuing with our vital conversation with Wanjiru Mambo, delving deeper into how they are building adaptation, community resilience within the potato food chain. Let's continue to grow together. From what I've heard, you seem to be working again with networks. Is there anything being done to involve the youth, the women, those with disability?
Yes, there's a lot of inclusivity discussions. Mm. It's very critical because youth, women, the people with disability sometimes tend to be left out.
Yeah.
Women have the, from the old tradition ways, they were the nurturers. When men went to gather, women were left to nurture the farms. It was their responsibility to also put food on the table.
Yeah.
Mm. I always say we have the hands of gold.
Yeah.
So if they're given equal opportunities, then we will change the narrative because they are good at it.
Yeah.
Even when we do the farmer engagement programs, the reason more men show up than women is because women have been left at home to take care of their kids.
Yeah.
They're the ones who had to take care of the farms. They have to cook. They have, you know, so many things.
Yes.
What about also taking to them information, even in their women groups? I know MasterCard has been very keen on women empowerment.
Yeah.
And even much of their contribution towards knowledge of farming to women, they work on it through the women groups, what you call in the Kenyan language chamas, because they work very well. Women are also, they're a bit excluded also in financing because they tend also not to have a security or something.
Yeah.
But now we are seeing many funds and facilities from our local banks to international development partners coming in to support women who are engaging in farming.
Okay.
And myself, I'm also very keen on that.
Okay.
And I've realized most of the women farmers that we have, they are very keen to information. They even call me my daughter. They call you and they want to get a bit by bit of every information of what
they
need.
They can do.
When you go to, they are happy to have you in their farms. You give them the inputs.
Yes.
You give them more insights and knowledge. Mm. So that's very important.
What about the issue about ownership of land?
Yeah,
how is that playing out?
Yeah, that's also the, so when you talk about even being, getting funding or facilities or being bankable, it's because also they don't have access. Mostly you'll find the land belongs to the man.
Yeah, the father or the husband or the brothers.
But one of the things that we want, you know, like because through the chamas, most of them are bankable. So you'll find people, financiers, don't look at they are being more lenient on security. It's like the women guarantee themselves, which is working very well.
Uh-huh.
And that's why even us women in business, you'll find there's a lot of guarantee funds coming in where we're not needed security.
Yes.
And it said the majority of women end up to pay their loans. They can, delay because of a few challenges.
Yes,
but the default rate with women is not as much.
It's not as much.
Yeah, so it's really encouraging.
Yeah.
In terms of youth, also, as I said, from an information point, we can do so much.
Yeah.
And we need to look back. Mm. These are the farms that made us who we are. They fed us. They took us to school. What else can we give back to?
How does a woman or youth without land enter into this and also enter, maybe they're in Nakuru, they want to do this farming, they want to start, they want to go in... but they don't own land. They want to be sure that they are doing climate smart agriculture.
There's a lot on land leasing to do farming.
Yeah.
And you find it doesn't cost you much. And if you do the right sort of farming, it pays off even the fee of leasing.
Oh.
So if you don't have the land, you know, you can also have the land and there's nothing you're doing with it, or the output is very poor.
Yeah.
What about considering to doing leasing?
Mm.
Groups are very good also to acquire pieces of land. That's another thing encouraged.
Yeah.
But the leasing model works very well because the capital needed to do the leasing is not as much like you wanted to buy. There's a lot of land coming up that was virgin or untapped Of course, we don't want the issue of people cutting down trees to do the farming. But there are those places that come coming up. And Nakuru is very vast.
Yeah.
You'll find there is so much of land that is underutilized.
Yeah.
That is one of the things we'll consider. And borrowing it even from the biggest farms, you know, even potatoes, those in the horticulture space.
Yeah.
Most of them don't own those lands.
Oh, they lease those lands.
They lease.
Amazing.
Yeah. So it's something we should also consider.
Have you identified and said, this is a great best practice that should be shared? This is something this really, really works when it comes to, do you have something or maybe one of the things you've already said that these are really, really works?
For me, and I tell everybody, because I get even my friends, my peers telling me, Wanjiru, I'm thinking of starting farming.
Yeah.
The one thing you'll ever do, and people don't have that knowledge of, is soil testing.
Soil testing.
Soil testing is the most critical thing. Oh. We keep on planting and planting, but we're planting on sick soils, soils that are in balanced pH, and we are still expecting results. And you keep pumping chemicals and chemicals. And when you understand how the soil works, it's like even our skins. For, before you recommended a facial product, a skin analysis is needed.
Yeah.
So if you understand your soil, you will even understand. And the one thing God gave us is, it's called symbiotic. What is it? Was it symbiotic? Where the everything, nature, they really complement each other.
Yeah.
That's the reason they will tell you when you remove potatoes, plant, let's say peas, cabbages, carrots, they improve the nitrogen.
Yeah. The ecosystem.
Exactly. So there's a way our ecosystem works. And you'll only know how it works.
The food web, the food chains.
If
all
you
those
understand
things.
How your soil does. And I'll make a quote that I like saying, forgetting to dig and forgetting to tend to ourselves is like forgetting ourselves. That was a quote done by Mahatma Gandhi.
Oh.
Who says our soils are the paramount? They feed us. They do so much for us.
We are so connected to the earth.
Yes.
So we tend to it. It's giving back to yourself.
And for it to continue, that's what we say, bioeconomy.
Yes.
As we take, what are we giving it? As we take, nature feeds us, but how are we taking care of it? And if we take care of it, it also takes care of ourselves. Mm. Yeah.
Wow. So is there something that our institutions of learning can do with the potato value chain in ensuring that the farmers are resilient?
There's so much. And as you asked me about, you know, the old versus the young, we need to go back to where we all started.
Yeah.
When we were growing up, we had subjects like agriculture. And we had demo farms in our schools.
Yes.
It's actually a project that you would do. Nowadays is not as much.
Yeah.
There's a lot of private schools coming in, international systems of education that have come in. And they're just feeding. As I said, the majority, we are just feeding. But we're thinking about the future.
The future, yeah.
And the narrative that has been fed to most of us, especially the millennials and the previous generations, agriculture was dirty.
Yes.
It's dirty.
Yeah.
It's for those who didn't go to college, those who didn't go to school.
If you fail, utarudi kwa mkulima.
Mkulima. You know, shambani. And the same thing I'm telling you, you go and Google typical African farmer, the picture is bad.
Yeah.
They look rugged, empty, hungry. Yeah, they're the ones who feed us.
Yeah.
So we need to go to the basics.
Yeah.
Teach to our kids all this about farming.
Yeah.
I've seen projects, even I know one of our Kenyan first lady, she's doing a bit of projects on schools and people putting up urban kitchens, which are very good because the children are able to learn.
Yeah.
If you ask our kids, where does even a carrot come from? They will give you the most genuine answer. They don't know how it grows.
They don't know.
Where does sugar cane come? They don't know.
They don't know.
We used to go school trips. You're taking to places like Moyatembere to see the rice plantation, to see pyrethrum.
Yeah.
Don't even know what pyrethrum is anymore.
Is.
So I feel we need to bring back all those learnings and education on agriculture. I know there's also the university will find the agribusiness as a course has evolved, but we can do much more.
Okay.
And how we can do it is train them from a tender age and from, you know, take this. I always say one of the projects I want to do in future is to bring back agriculture clubs in school.
Okay.
Like my child will tell you they are doing sports, they are doing all this, you know, those clubs they are in.
Yeah.
But can we bring agriculture clubs? Then in also these schools, they are great consumers and some have good lands. Why can't you do your urban small some vegetable farming, garden, teach kids about it, and you'll be amused how it really transformed them. And with technology, they are seeing all these things on TikTok and something of gardens and what they will even use that knowledge to transform it better.
Yes, in TikTok and what have
you. Yeah, so it's very important to, as the people in charge of our school curriculum, together with all the organizations in the agri space, we need to take it back to our younger, train them as they grow.
Yeah.
I grew up in Limuru where we had plenty of plums, pears and peach. But nowadays they are not there. But they were, eat under all a over, tree. If that season around December on the road, on the Nakuru highway, you see many vendors. Right now it's not the case.
It's not the case.
So what has gone wrong? How can we bring back all those crops? Yeah. And what will we teach our kids? We saw our parents going to farm and all that.
And they're not seeing us.
But now as they see us going to the office, driving and doing all that.
Some have not interacted much with the soil.
There's a place in Karen called Adventure Farm. And I'm happy the person behind it.
Mm.
What he has done, he's done a farm. It has all the animals, chicken, pigs, everything, rabbits, sheep, cows, and all that. Then they have gardens. So you take your children there to learn. And that place is always packed because our modern kids in Nairobi don't have an encounter of farms.
So it is like the Nairobi show.
Yeah, so a school trip is booked to Adventure Farm. A kid pays for 2,000 shillings. They see a cow being milked. They have never seen. Because also, most we don't have... even the grandparents are also staying in Nairobi, in the urban centers.
Yeah.
So it's so fascinating that he has done a demo farm in the city and kids are paying for it. So what else can we do to encourage that?
It is actually part of resilience, ensuring that the next generation has that knowledge.
Yeah, and Africa in the next 50 years to come, it will be the one to feed the entire world.
Next 50 years.
Yeah, so what are we doing about it?
Yeah.
Because we have underutilized resources.
Mm.
Our lands are good. We can produce so much more in terms of agriculture. We actually don't need to do a lot of importation.
Yeah.
So what can we adopt? And in terms of also schools and all that, science helps agriculture evolve. These kids, if they are in, they have, we call it the STEM, the science, technology, education, math, and all that. They have more knowledge. Can they bring this knowledge back into the agri-food system? That will really help transition because they have the knowledge.
Yeah.
So it will help transition the food system and improve our productivity.
And what would you say about, we always see 10 counties have no food, people are dying of hunger. What can you say? How can that issue be resolved?
Apparently, the season you're going into, it's a lot of rains, especially the season of between June to September, plenty of food everywhere. But then you have high post-harvest losses. If I take my tomatoes to Marigiti today, a full truck, and I don't sell them within the next 2 days, where am I taking the rest?
Yeah.
But there are people who are pulping tomatoes.
Yeah.
If they pulp tomatoes, they act or dry them, then they can use them at a later stage.
Later stage.
So to make sure people are fed throughout the season and the food is affordable, we need to think about post-harvest losses and how to increase the shelf life of some of these products.
Yeah.
And that's in the field, in the potato value chain. Taking potatoes and increasing the shelf life. When we process, they have a shelf life of at least 4 days. It's better off.
Yeah.
You have peeled them. You have moved them from the farmers to the other market.
Yeah.
We have herbs can be dried and there's a lot of exported dried herbs going outside the country.
Yes.
It's a huge market. So we need to understand the value chain of different types of foods that we have.
Yeah.
If I have a farmer in Nakuru, can I be their market? throughout the year. Mm. They plant potatoes I offtake.
Yeah.
And I offtake without selection, because even the smaller ones, which currently I might not process,
yeah,
I have already come up with other products that make sure, make sure I carry everything. I don't leave you a single potato.
Okay.
If let's say you rotate and you plant cabbages the next season, what else can I do with these cabbages?
Mm.
If you plant carrots, if you plant all that, what else can I do?
Mm.
Then we need to, when you also understand some of these market trends, like you've seen in the supermarket, a mixed vegetable, carrot, the French beans, cut down the broccolis and all that. This is part of what we are giving value to the farmer.
Yes.
Then are there things that we can store to use later?
Yes.
We have seen, at least even the places relief food is given, it's given in terms of dried foods.
Mm.
But we can't always give maize and porridge flour.
Yeah.
What else that is more nutritious that we can give? And that's where there's also the issue of fortification of foods to increase the nutritional value of what is there. Mm. I've encountered a product like a potato flour. It's already you put water and it's mashed. Then you increase the value. You have milk, you can add it butter, you can add it a dried spinach and it's grounded.
Yeah.
My friend called Tay, she has a product called Stude. Stude is a dried dengu put with flavors like chicken and beef. And what she does is like an instant. You put water, put in a microwave 3 minutes, and that's good food. So these are even the foods the government should be buying for distribution.
For distribution.
Or encourage, support her so that she's able to produce more and these people can keep.
All right.
So we need to know how best ways to preserve and extend the shelf life of our foods.
Mm.
Of course, the cold chain system is very complicated, and it's not something we have, as Kenya or Africa, we have really gotten through it. The cold chain is like what we do, because our product is fresh and it needs a bit of refrigeration.
Okay.
But dried products are easy to extend the shelf life. You can do dried vegetables, the managus, the mrenda, all that. So can we teach even our farmers, when you have plenty, this is how you preserve your food. You can have community solar dryers where you can go dry your stuff and keep it for yourselves.
Yeah.
If it's the onions, the cabbages, all that. There's also a technology called dehydration.
Dehydration.
You remove the water, then when you add water, the product goes back to normal.
Oh.
So there are many technologies, but it means government intervention, development partners who are keen on climate issues and resilience to support our local farmers. With that, we also improve our economic lives.
Yeah.
It's not just putting food on the table, but doing farming that also earns you a decent living, takes your kids to school, affords you good health care.
Okay. Yeah. You've mentioned government intervention in some of these things, and that was our next question. What are some of the policies and legislation that are they adequate, or are there some policies, especially these things that you've mentioned about post-harvest, but still along all the value chain, is there something else that needs to be done? And especially if you think of the people even in Nakuru and surrounding.
First, I'll speak on in terms of the potato value chain.
Yeah.
One of the things the government did and did very well, and I stand for it, is the standardization of packaging of produce. You remember, a potato will be a big sack up, you know, and they are giving you a value per sack.
Yeah.
I buy potatoes per kilo because I do my costing per kilo.
How much is a kilo?
A kilo from the farmers, that's why I'm saying it goes between 30 to 50 shillings depending on the season.
Yeah.
But we buy per kilo. So if I come to you as a farmer, I want you to package to me as per regulation where we were told not to package more than 50 kgs in a bag of potatoes.
Okay.
So that we give value to the farmers.
Yeah.
Because I put, you know, the way they put a net on top and they keep.
That's 1500.
Then the one on top is another sack and you didn't get value.
Yes.
And they bought the same maybe for 2000 shillings.
It's true.
So what about if you give them per kilo? You see, they will get their 1500. But now I'm buying 1500 and there is much more on top of just a sack. So those are some of the things they've really tried to work on to just regularize packaging.
So there was a regulation that came around that in terms of packing.
Of packing.
Because farmers were being exploited.
Exploited. And when we carry, let's say from Nakuru to coming to Nairobi, I like it. At the weighing bridge, they always check. And I tell my farmers, I don't want to be told this is wage hut who is buying potatoes like that. Yeah. It needs to be part of the rule, because we sat down through people like National Potato Council, and those things were passed. Okay. Those regulations were passed. And after a lot of, you know, engagement of all the stakeholders. Mm. In terms of now, the some of the other things our government can do is give people better storage spaces, or as I've said, the dryers and all that, that are communal. Mm. This helps people avoid a lot of post-harvest losses and value. If I bring avocados to the market or tomatoes, if I can't sell to them, can you give me a space to keep them, a cold space to keep them? Then tomorrow I can still continue selling them.
Yeah.
And that brings a lot of value.
Mm.
Then the other thing is like still in the potato chain.
Yeah.
We had, there was an outburst of like 2 years ago where Kenyans is like, that's the time they discover there's a lot of imported frozen potatoes.
Yeah.
And our government intervened, started taxing them highly, which was good for us because we are having some of these consumers who are using the frozen now coming to use the fresh because the price has gone up.
Okay.
So those are some of the things they support local farmers and their outputs. That, and this applies to many other...
It's another post-COVID...
Yes, advantage.
Advantage.
Can also these players of hotels be mandated to also consume and support smallholder farmers because they are very good consumers.
Yeah.
But stop using frozen imported products.
Yeah.
Support our own and local.
And local.
But then this now goes back to the producers of all these agri outputs, the farmers and all that. Let's learn the rules and regulations of these markets.
Yeah.
If I'm supplying this hotel, what are they keen on?
Yeah.
Can I work on that? Mm. When we multinational franchises come to the country, they say the reason you wanted to import is because this company we have attested they have met all these requirements in terms of food processing. Mm. There's even a track and trace from the farm to the fork.
Yeah.
So as also the people in the farming space, as the processors, let's know those regulations and stick to it.
Wow.
When a country says they are banning importation of, let's say, macadamia or something from Kenya or avocados, why?
Yeah.
Let's understand that and stick to that. So our government, I would say they are very keen on support of the agriculture space right now because they know it's a very key driver to our economy. It contributes to 30% of our GDP.
Mm.
And such regulations are very encouraging. But... We always say they can do much more.
Yeah.
Like the issue of fertilizers, can you subsidize for our farmers? Can you control also the inputs, fertilizers, chemicals being sold to the market so that, you know, they could be also the reasons our soil are depleting.
Depleting,
and this comes back also to bite us in terms of health and our nutrition.
Mm.
So those are the regulations you should stick to. For potato also, this when they say certified, KEFIS is very keen to make sure people are given certified. They are the people certifying that seed.
Yeah.
That means they have a test. It's a good potato for our local market.
Yes.
So there are many government bodies in the agri space, so many of them and in different sectors. They're doing something good, and you know, and I think the other thing is just much more of collaboration, so that you don't have this body is doing this, another one. Like, I find so much research being done about farmers, but all this data and research is there. So, can we now use this data
be
to drive some change?
Okay, why is this information not being used?
As we say, there's a lot of information out there, even the government has so much information, you need to either dig deeper to find it.
Yeah.
Because they are not willingly availing it to us. And find development partners, even the NGOs supporting the agriculture space, women. The potato value chain is getting a lot of support.
Is it the government or is it that the people don't know where the information is?
People don't know the information is.
Yeah.
But like the counties, the agriculture department in the county level, they have so much.
Yeah.
I shouldn't even be collecting my data of farmers. They should just go and do it and they give it to me.
They have a lot of information.
Yeah, but everyone is trying it on their own. And that's why I say if people could collaborate, there's so much that we can do together.
Yeah.
There's no need of everyone spending their own resources doing the same thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
How can everybody access more resources to build their farms, to build resilience? How do you access more resources?
Internationally, Agriculture is getting a lot of backup and funding from all over, either from banks, local, international. And one of the pillars, especially of our local banks, the big ones that you know, is the key focus in the next like 10 years is agriculture. And for a long time, the agriculture sector has been not well funded because of lack of good structures. If I come and you want a loan and you're a farmer, what am I using as security? How am I? And it's also, it's a very erratic sort of space. You're not sure. It's not like the way I'm running my business. You can show these are my revenues, these are my sales. There are some farmers that are seasonal and all that.
Yeah.
What I say, number one, to start accessing resources, make sure you do proper record keeping. It makes you bankable and someone can attest. You're actually doing this and they can look at your history. And it doesn't, you don't have to be computer literate. Write also in a book. People take books printed or, you know, photocopies. There are institutions financing agriculture space that go by that.
They'll just look at what you've been writing on
my
the
book. My mother used to get loans for farming from AFC. Agriculture Corporation, Finance Corporation. She never used to have access to computers to type. She would write her business proposal on paper with a pen and submit it. So that's the first thing. Number two, if the mainstream funding, like the financial institutions, the community groups are very good and cooperatives. I really encourage people and farmers working through cooperatives. They are very supportive and a cooperative is able to pool resources. You'll find, like I was saying, the solar solutions are being brought up to for a community. The dryers are being brought into a community. They are sorting tables for like the tea sector. You see, they have a place they all deposit all their tea or coffee. So cooperatives are very good and very supportive in the agriculture space. And the other thing for people in the value chain, there's so much resources also of development partners supporting us so that we're able to support the farmers. We have the Agra, MasterCard, Shell
Foundation. So they give, from time to time, they give you grants, not loans.
They give you grants. And what these grants help, they are not, they are helping you to support the farmers. If I go, the projects I've done to go and collect information of farmers to educate them, it's a cost to my organization. But someone else is willing to come and support you on that, to compensate on that. If I need more cold storage so that I can take in more potatoes, those are areas they are supporting.
They're supporting you.
So, but you need to show how you're impacting our smallholder farmers, how it's trickling down to them. So those are some of the ways that you can able to pull the resources. But all in all, most of our local banks, their key focus in the next 10 years is agriculture.
It's going to be agriculture.
As I said, 30% of our GDP, that's where it is. It has been a space not well funded, but now so much is happening around it.
Wow. Thank you so much, Wanjiru, for finding time. The information has been very, very valuable. Is there one closing remark that you may want to give?
Having been in the food chain and becoming so passionate about it and knowing where our problems are and where the how the future is looking, I always say, please remember that Africa needs to feed Africa. In whatever you do, if everyone would carry that statement in their head, we'll do a lot of changes in our own small spaces and in our own small ways to make sure that our economies thrive. If food issues are sorted, every other pillar of the economy definitely thrives. And thank you for having me.
Asante sana. Wow. Thank you.
And that concludes our insightful two-part series with the incredible Wanjiru Mambo. Thank you for joining me, Maslin Nyambala, on this journey.
Thank you for listening to the Africa Speaking Podcast. Join us in our next episode brought to you by Twiza Communications in partnership with Forum Sieve. For any comments and views, you can reach us through our website, www.africaspeaking.org. You can also reach us on Facebook, Twiza Communications, or on our X handle, @TwizaComs. You can also write to us on email info@africaspeaking.org.